Amen. We're going to jump right into the Gospel of John. And in order to do this, I want you to stop and consider this. It's a book. You know, you and I don't even think anything of this. This is a book, page by page. It's made out of paper pulp, and it's a book. But have you ever stopped to consider that this is an invention? And there was a day when books did not exist. Somebody had to figure out how to make some form of paper. Somebody had to figure out that if you put a stack of paper together and sew it together, you can make a book. We don't even think about this. We don't even stop to think that it was in the early 1500s that Gutenberg invented the printing press. Before then, every single copy of the Gospel according to John and every other book had to be hand-printed. Amazing what it takes. Where did we get this book? This book was copied from the book before it. That version of the Bible was copied from the version before it, and before it, and before it, and before it. Dozens of editions of the Bible, dozens of translations that have given us this book that is in my hand. Go backwards in time. Before the printing press, everything had to be done by hand. And so you copied from one to the other. Go backwards, backwards, backwards. Backwards. Originally, there was a first copy. This was known as the autograph. I was sitting in seminary one day in a New Testament class when our professor challenged us to say, think more deeply. And he said, I want to show you a picture. And he took the Gospel of John and he said, look at this. And he put a copy of John 1 up on the picture, up on the slides. And he went backward. He said, now, here's a picture of the Gutenberg Bible, 1 John 1. And then he went back to show us different versions of John, the first chapter. And we got back to, oh, I don't know. I'm going to guess that it was about the 10th generation of copies. It's very, very difficult to tell. And by the way, there are no original autograph copies of the Bible that still exist. We've never been able to find them yet. They may be out there somewhere, but we haven't found them yet. He showed us a picture of probably about the 10th generation. And then the next slide was to show us the 9th. And he said, now look at the differences. Now this was all in its original Greek. And so he had to guide us through, but he had to say, do you see the difference in handwriting? Do you see the difference in the letters, in the words? And then he showed us the 8th, and then the 7th, and he said, now, watch this. And he went back to the next generation, he went back, and all of a sudden John 1 disappeared. What? Oh my gosh, I'd never thought about this before. The version of John that you and I have right here did not originally exist. The first chapter of John was added later. We don't know, 50 years later, 100 years later, I don't know. But it was added in, along with the 8th chapter, the story of the woman caught in adultery, along with other very, very important parts of John. They were added in later. Oh my goodness, let me tell you what that means for us today. The original gospel writer put in the story of resurrection. And on the third day, while it was still dark, Mary went to the grave. And when she came, the stone had been rolled away. She looked inside and Jesus was not there. She ran back to get the disciples. The disciples came and they saw that Jesus was not there, but Mary stayed. While they left, she stayed. And when she looked in the grave, there were two men who said, woman, why are you crying? He's not here. And going out of the grave, she basically collapsed on the lawn to say, so confused. And a man behind her that she thought was the gardener said, woman, why are you crying? This is amazing. The original author put that story in there. You ready for this? The original author did not know the beginning of the story. It was a different beginning. But the author who wrote the beginning that you and I have today knew step by step, he knew exactly what the ending was. Oh my gosh! So what he did, what the second author did was he wrote the punchline into the introduction. And we get to John chapter 20 and it says, while it was still dark. Now when he wrote that, what he was saying was, on that Sunday morning in that year when Mary went, he was talking about that little piece in time. But the author of the beginning took it and twisted it and put a brand new meaning in it. And the author of the beginning said this: in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And the Word, in the Word was life, and in that life was the light for all humanity. These are incredible words, because let me tell you what he just did. Instead of talking about Jesus right then, right there on that resurrection day, now he was talking about the Christ. This was not just a Jesus who was killed in Jerusalem. This was now a Christ who was there as a light for all the world. John is a genius at working with this image of light and dark and light and dark. And when that new beginning, when chapter one was added on to John, all of a sudden, he put the punchline at the very beginning, and there was light. You need to know that while it was still dark, there was light. Come with me into Mary's story. Let me ask you this very simple question. What was the worst day of Mary's life? The worst day of Mary's life would have been, well, Friday, the day that Jesus was crucified. We chose to pull up this cross. In the Roman bag of tools, they used many different kinds of crosses. The Romans were geniuses at torture and execution. Sometimes they used the tall crosses, and that is the cross that you and I are used to. But when we go back in archaeology, when we go back and explore, one of the things that we discover was that there was a different style of Jerusalem cross that was used. It's shorter. This was not to put the feet on. This was to sit on. And what they did was to nail the ankles into the side. When you died of crucifixion, you died of asphyxiation. And by simply nailing your feet to the side, which is what we have found out in archaeological digs, you could sit. And what happened was that this kept you alive longer. Jesus died in 3 hours. But it was not uncommon for a criminal to die in 3 days. This was an instrument of absolute cruelty and darkness. What was the worst day in Mary's life? It was the day that Jesus was crucified. She was there on Golgotha, on the garbage dump. There was a time when inside of that crucifixion, if she had been able to get through the guards, she could have walked up and literally touched him. She was close enough to watch him, to hear him breathe, to watch him bleed. This was the worst moment of her life until he died. And that became the worst moment of her life. And she was one of those who was there to help bring him down off the cross. They had to move quickly. Because in the Jewish tradition, it was Friday Sabbath at sundown. You have to stop whatever you're doing. Nothing happens for 24 hours, and they got him down off the cross, they got him wrapped, and they got him down into an empty grave, and they rolled the stone, and they went back home. Do you think Mary slept that night? I doubt it. I think that the grief and the shock would have been absolutely overwhelming. And the next day, she got up, and what could she do? Nothing. It's Sabbath. She is forbidden to do anything, and so she waits the entire day. How long was that day? And she went through the next night. Do you think she slept? If so, not much. And she volunteered to be the one to get up in the morning and to go to the grave and to prepare that body. Now, in John, it says she went alone. In the other Gospels, it says she went with friends. Whichever it was, she went to the grave on the worst day of her entire life. And as she walked, while it was still dark. The numbness, the absolute devastation on the darkest day of her life. What she was expecting was that she would get to the grave, she would somehow find somebody who could help her roll the stone away. The stone was rolled, and the body was gone, and now the worst day of her life became the worst day of her life. It's bad enough that she was expecting to find a decomposing, brutalized body, but now the body was gone. This was the worst moment. And she wound up collapsed on the lawn in front of that tomb. And a man comes up behind her. And she has no idea who this is. With the numbness in her brain and in her heart, with the tears in her eyes, she cannot recognize. Who would recognize? And she said to him, "Sir, if you've taken his body, then tell me where it is and I'll put it back." And Jesus said one word. Her name, Mary. She recognized that voice. She recognized that inflection. She knew immediately who this was. Can you imagine going from the worst moment in your entire life to the best? You know what we call this? Resurrection. It was not just the fact that Jesus had been resurrected by God. It was the fact that she was resurrected by the Christ. You see, this resurrection energy is not just reserved for Christ. It comes to Christ, it comes through Christ. But it is meant for all of us. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was the life, and the life was the light of all people. This resurrection power was the light breaking into the darkness. While it was still dark, Mary went to the grave. And there she was confronted with the light that was God's living presence, the light of the resurrected Jesus Christ. This applies to you and me. Let me introduce you to Rusty John. Oh my gosh, this is an old story, one that goes way back into my childhood. Rusty John, I don't know when he was born, but what I know was that Rusty John was a farmer's son who lived in the same house his entire life. He was born in that house. He died in that house 90 years later. Rusty John was a farmer by Judd, North Dakota, J-U-D, North Dakota. He lived 3 miles east of town in that small linoleum-covered kitchen. And on one of those days, when I was a boy, my father took me out, and we went and visited Rusty John, and Rusty John began talking about stories. I don't know why he was talking about this, but he talked about being a farmer and a farmer's son in the mid-1930s. I don't know, 1935, 1936, and he talked about the darkness. A day was a day. In the 1935 and 36, the days were generally cloudless and perfectly clear because there was no moisture in the environment. But there came those days when darkness flooded that land, and he would go out onto the front lawn, well, the front dirt, and would watch on the horizon as the darkness would come. Inside of that year, whichever year that was, they had planted wheat. From the Canadian border all the way down almost to the Mexican border, every single farmer who could break up the land, turn it over, and plant wheat did. And what this meant was that they plowed up way too much. And then the wheat wouldn't grow in that severe drought. Well, in that spring, this would have been about June, The wheat had actually sprouted and was actually growing, and then came the darkness. That darkness, as he watched it come closer and closer to that house, locusts. And all you could do in a cloud of locusts in the darkness was go inside, close the doors, close the windows, and hope that they didn't get in. And those locusts came and ate everything. Anything that was green, they demolished. It was gone. They would land on fence posts, and they would eat the fence posts, those wooden posts, down to a toothpick. And then the locusts would leave and the light would come back. And Rusty John told me about the light and the darkness and the darkness and the light. And then about a month later, the darkness came again, but this time it was a different darkness. This was the dust storm. As the wind that blew in that drought picked up Oklahoma and picked up Nebraska and put it into the hearts. And the saying was, I have North Dakota in my heart, but Nebraska in my lungs. And the darkness covered, and all they could do was to go into the house and close the door and close the windows and take wet towels and put them on the bottom windowsills and under and on the door to try to keep any of the dust out. They had nothing. They lost everything. And they barely survived, but Rusty John lived in that house all the way through it. And then, miracle of miracles, 1935 passed, and 1936 passed, and 1937 came, and it started to rain. And like a miracle, the earth was resurrected. The earth had forgotten what it was like to have water and to grow, but it remembered, and the grass began to come, and the grain began to grow, and they were resurrected. The people were resurrected. How is this in your life? How is it that you have survived through times in your life? All the things that can go wrong when our relationships go belly up and something happens, all the times that we have lost people to death, all the times that we have been fired from our jobs, all the times when we have flunked tests, all the times when our friendships have been rejected, all the times when the worst things in life can happen, all the times you and I live in darkness. And this gospel, according to John, was written exactly for us, exactly for you. To say, in the times of deepest darkness, you need to know the punchline. When we hear those words, while it was still dark, that's not a word, a sentence that applies to just one day when Jesus rose. No, no, no. It applies to our lives. It applies to our universe. It applies to life. And you need to hear the punchline that was written at the beginning of the book. And God sent Christ as the life and light in the middle of the darkness. While it was still dark in your life, the resurrection light comes. The resurrection is Jesus Christ. But not just for Jesus Christ. The resurrection comes through Jesus Christ to me, to you, to us, to our world. The end thing is never the end thing. The last word is never the last word. Let me ask you, which kind of darkness do you live in? Do you live in the darkness that is the tomb or the darkness that is the womb? Do you focus on the darkness that is in your past? Do you focus on the darkness of all that has been? And let that rule and control your life? Or is there a way to claim that this is not the end of something, this is the beginning of something? Is there a way to claim that the darkness that we live in is the darkness of the womb and that something new is being born? This is the power, the living power of the Gospel of John. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was the life, and the life was the light of something new that was being born. This is resurrection in your life and in mine. There's more to life than death. There's more to life than divorce. There's more to life than bankruptcy. There's more to life than failure. There's more to life. There's more. The darkness of the tomb is very real. But even more real is the darkness of the womb, of that which is about to be born. This is what we claim. In the Gospel according to John, in the 10th chapter, Jesus says, "I am the light of the world." But fascinatingly, in the Gospel of Matthew, Jesus says, "You are the light of the world." And I don't hear one of those, I hear both of those. I hear that when we claim for ourselves the power of darkness that is the womb, when we claim for ourselves that Jesus is the light of the world, there is something that is new born within us. And then when it shines, you become the light of the world. That light is not just for you to keep. That light is for you to share. That light is for you to spread. That light, that resurrection power, is not to be kept, but to be turned loose onto this world. May it be this week that you claim the power of the womb, the light that is breaking the darkness. May it be that when you hear those words, and while it was still dark, that you've already heard the punchline. You already know how this is going to turn out. That in the midst of the darkness, the light shines. May it be in Jesus' name. Amen. Would you pray with me? Lord of life, Lord of light, shine in our lives that we may not be overcome by the darkness, but rather, Lord, simply